Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
How to Talk Like a Pirate. Section 1. Preparing Your Voice. Try saying this phrase.
Avast ye scurvy scum.
Doesn't sound right, does it? That's because you need to prepare your voice. The language of pirate is spoken in the back of the throat, here in the thromborax. Speaking pirate also requires use of exaggerated vowel sounds.
A, E, I, O, U, R.
The original gruffness of pirate speech was caused by years of hard living, salty air, and alcohol abuse. The effect can be approximated by taking a large drink of rum just prior to speech.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday, right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. And true currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by Back to Nature Compost. Life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil. And by Ecolon, the ultimate low-maintenance, drought-tolerant lawn. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. If Mother Earth and Father Time had a baby, never mind. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Army buckos, avast ye swabs. Did you know this be talk like a pirate day, all day today? And, I appreciate the fact that it's on a Sunday. Arr. Come on, Leah.
Arr. Is that better? I was trying to practice my pirate. I'm not well versed.
You're not fluent in pirate?
I know it should be required at every school curriculum.
It should be. That's Leah Petrujak, as her grandmother would say.
Yes.
Why? Well, I'm looking at my inbox on the my folder here. It says no messages. That's not true. I know that there are. What? See, I won't even go into that. It is. Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Heather's not here. And if Heather were, she would be. The wench would be talking like a pirate.
Hmm.
Don't you think?
We'll get her on the line.
Arr.
Heather, call in.
She's under the weather, and she looks like a pirate now.
You hear what it sounds like when a pirate throws up.
Yeah. Oh, ow, yeah. Her poor little William got this nasty, nasty bug, and then he got a little bit better, and then she got it, and then he got it back, and now she's still recovering, and it just goes back and forth. I'm telling you, kids are just, they're just Petri dishes. That's living Petri dishes. And we got
speaking of kids,
yes, yeah, right. And we've got at least one person in the room who knows that, that is Emily Kenny from O'Keefe Elementary School on the south side of Chicago. Now we will get to her in a second. Yeah, you can slide that microphone over to Carol Becker, who's the executive director of the Midwest Ecological Landscaping Association, and Teresa. Is it Conley or Conley?
Conley.
Therese Conley is here, too. We will talk to them in just a second about what's going on. What happened this summer and what's happened over the past few years near O'Keefe Elementary School and how some folks got involved in putting a garden together and the difference it's made in the neighborhood. And it's a great, great story. It's a great way to start off Talk Like a Pirate Day. And anybody who wants to call me and talk like a pirate is welcome, 773-838-9278. Rick DeMaio weather, of course, at 9:30. Jennifer David, the chief horticulturist at the Lurie Garden. She's just started that job, well, this year. Actually, she's been doing it for a few months. She's in the studio after 9. And Josh Mogerman from the Natural Resources Defense Council is here later in the show, probably around 9:30 or so. You know, we had another oil spill. Just when you think, oh, you know, we don't have to worry about those kinds of things in the Midwest. Here we are looking at the people, the poor people in New Orleans, they got to deal, in the Gulf Coast, they got to deal with all that oil. Well, guess what? We do too in the Midwest. We had a huge honking spill out by Kalamazoo. And I thought, well, you know, it's Michigan. So, I'm from Michigan. You know, let the oil spill there. But then suddenly, it's spilling in Illinois, in the suburbs. There's oil everywhere. And guess what? We're surrounded by it. There are pipelines all over the place. And we're going to talk to Josh Mogerman from the Natural Resources Defense Council about a couple of things. One, how dangerous is that? Because that oil's coming from tar sands in Alberta, Canada. It's not coming from deep under the ground where the oil is, where the crude is pure and sweet. They call it sweet crude. But it's the tar sands where it's one of the most environmentally nasty kinds of oil, where you have to remove all kinds of things before it gets down here. Why are we going forward with stuff like that? Where are all these pipelines under the Midwest? And the gas prices immediately spiked when this happened. And Josh told me the other day, he said, well, I didn't really have anything to do with it. I said, what? He said, well, you know, the day it happened, the gas prices spiked. Well, they still had the oil. There was still gasoline. So who's manipulating that, huh? Who is jacking up the prices and who's winning and who's losing? Well, I can tell you who's losing. The consumer's losing on that one. And we'll talk about that in the second hour as well. But let's move over. I'm still a little concerned because my inbox at my folder here has no messages. And last week there were messages. Every time I turn around, the file that the station gives me is there's something weird with it. So, oh well. Let's turn to Carol Becker. She's the executive director of the Midwest Ecological Landscaping Association, and that's a mouthful. Just call them MELA. And full disclosure, I'm one of the founding members of MELA. But that doesn't mean they're not doing good work. In fact, they kicked me out a couple of years ago, and now they're doing really, really good work. Right, Carol?
Hey, you got it, Mike.
Because, I brought in Carol Becker, and immediately she pulled this coup and took over and said, now you can just show up at functions and have a glass of wine.
And be honored.
Right, and be honored and have a glass of wine and just watch all the great stuff we're doing. And you are doing some wonderful stuff. We should talk real briefly about what MELA does, Carol. You know, like I said, Midwest Ecological Landscaping Association. Yes. So what does that mean to me?
Well, we do great things, and you're going to hear about one of our projects on the South Side in a little bit. We are a trade association of people who work in horticulture. That means people who put in gardens, people who design gardens, material producers, arborists, that's tree people.
I'm glad you explained it.
An arborist. What's an arborist?
Arborist.
That's a good pirate word.
Arborist. I want to be an
arborist
when I grow up. If I ever grow up. If I be growing up. That's the proper way to say it.
Yep.
It is Talk Like a Pirate Day.
And we work with the people in the industry to help them learn about sustainability. Now, sustainability is a kind of a jargony word.
You know, it is, and it's getting to the point where it's, I don't even like to use the word
anymore.
I know,
I don't either. because it's too jargony.
But so's green. So's all the words have been co-opted. All the words that might explain what people do in this business have been co-opted and used against the people who want to do those things in some way. Because either companies use them to greenwash their own products, which are not particularly sustainable, or it's used against those people by the forces of darkness, you know, the forces of pollution.
It's really all about doing what's right for the world, for the environment, and thinking responsibly about resources. It's really that simple and that complex, too. So we work with industry people to say, how can we do the work that we do in designing, in installing, in caring for gardens, garden spaces, large and small, in ways that are responsible for the environment.
That says it.
That's it.
And Mila's been doing this since 2002. It was interesting when the Trib wrote about what you were doing on the South Side. They were very funny because you got one mention in the story. You did this great work down there. You got one mention, and you were sort of summarily dismissed as, a kind of a young organization. And now let's move on. Hello? Hello, Tribune? They've been doing good work for a long time, but, Tribune's bankrupt anyway, so. I'm glad they covered it. One of the things you've started doing in the area of sustainability is projects that can show what Mila's capable of accomplishing.
Right, and we do that both so the public can see that, but also so that our own members can come and see how to do a specific job in a sustainable way.
Well, that's a really good point, even people in the industry say, I want to be sustainable, and then they do the same old, same old. They really don't know how to approach a project, what kind of plant material to
use. That's right. We all have habits, and some of the habits that we've been using are not particularly good for the environment. We mow lawns, and we carry away truckloads of cut grass and put it in the landfill.
Mm-hmm. Which is insane.
That's like your truckload of nitrogen.
Right, a truckload of nitrogen. You might as well put a truckload of ammonium nitrate in a truck and dump it in a landfill. And let me just say this to folks, not landscapers, but average folks, but landscapers as well. Don't truck away your lawn clippings. Right. Leave them on your lawn. They're going to put nitrogen
feed
the soil.
I mean, there are so many things that are self-evident, would have been self-evident in a couple generations ago, but aren't anymore, because we do live in a world where we're much separated from nature. And I often tell customers myself, those plants in your garden, they're not like vases on your mantle. They actually grow and change, and you have to think about them that way. So we teach our members and we learn from our members about sustainability. And the main message right now is there are a lot of simple things you can do to be more sustainable. There are a lot of easy steps toward being more responsible that we can all take that we should start out with. And it's not a complete change in your business model. It's a process of change. And that's the same for the homeowner. You don't have to completely change the way you take care of your yard. You can do one or two things that'll make a huge difference.
And on that note, why don't you, Emily, pull that microphone over to you a little bit. Emily Kenny from O'Keefe. Yeah, that'll be great. From O'Keefe Elementary School. You're a science teacher.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning. I have to play this then if you're a science teacher. See, she blinded me with
science.
Okay. Anytime I deal with science on this show, I have to play that. You teach on the South Side at O'Keefe Elementary. And this garden, there was a garden there, but the whole story of how this evolves now is the result of a tragedy. Without getting into too much detail, tell me what happened down there.
Oh, there was a student who was in the gifted program. It's a science program. He's very bright. But unfortunately, his mother had a boyfriend who got into some problems with drugs or something. Both the child and the mother were killed. They were murdered and then set afire in her van. They found them on. She was on her way to taking him to school.
And was that near the school there?
That was it occurred blocks away from the school, mm-hmm. several blocks away.
And
from
where?
The
where's the school exactly?
The school is located in the South Shore area in Chicago, mm-hmm. which is along the lake. It's a beautiful area, but it's also a high crime area. Mm-hmm. So it's very unusual.
And the garden was already in the neighborhood, from what I understand?
The garden was there. It was initially a community garden for seniors. Some of the key operators at that time they moved away, and you know, the garden was abandoned, and so it became an eyesore. The alderman was getting calls because the garden on the north and south end of the garden, there are two condominiums, and they were getting a lot of calls about the debris and the weeds and all of this. So the alderman asked the area schools to come and claim stake the garden. And the first school to get there with their sign would become the new managers of the garden.
So they were all making signs and let's run out to the garden.
But,
we gotta get there.
But we were the fastest.
Well, it's like being in Oklahoma in the 1890s, right?
Yeah. So we're only a half a block away. So it was really a given. Mm-hmm. So we got there with our sign, and that's how we started the O'Keefe School Elementary Garden.
Uh-huh.
What made the garden a very special place is the fact that after Troy's death, the students wanted to...
I just love that the door rings and it's like bleeding in here. It's hey, Mike, get the door! Is that the pizza?
Yeah.
Okay,
oh
great. I thought it was Paco's Tacos we were getting this morning.
No, it's okay. A veggie pizza. Okay.
I'm sorry.
It's life. Okay, we can just stop it.
It's life on the Mike Novak Show is what it is. But you were talking about how you claimed the garden.
Yes. We did claim the garden, and the children wanted to put in a memorial there for Troy. Mm-hmm. They were thinking about flowers, and some of the kids wanted a tree, and so we compromised and decided on a bush. Mm-hmm. So they found this beautiful bush in...
It was a burning bush.
A burning bush,
yes.
Yeah.
Now, those of us in the sustainability world, this is ironic because it's nowadays considered a little bit invasive. You didn't know that?
But you know what? That was good in this case.
Yes, because somebody stole the bush.
Yes.
Ripped it out.
Yes.
I mean, I've had things like that happen, but that had to have been devastating for the kids when their bush got stolen.
It was. They were very upset, and they were crying, and they said, someone stole Troy's bush. What are we going to do? So I thought, well, we'll buy another bush, mm-hmm. but we'll wait until the spring, and we'll get another bush. The beautiful thing about the story is that we didn't have to do that. The bush, evidently when they took the bush, they left some of the root system there. And
because burning bush is so prolific.
Yes.
Yes. That's
so
one of the reasons we're
worried
about it.
It grew back.
Right. It grew back.
And so how big is it now?
It's about 4 feet, 4 feet or so. Yeah,
goodness.
It's a good sized bush.
Yeah. So you had the burning bush there, but the problem is that was pretty much all you had in the garden, and it was hard to keep the weeds out and keep the garden looking nice, right?
That's true. We don't have, being in a public school, we didn't have a budget. Actually, there was no budget for the garden. So we were depending on donations and things of that sort. There were a lot of things. There was transition and leadership in the building. So that wasn't priority. The garden was no longer priority. Mm-hmm. So we were just keeping it clean and pulling the weeds, so to speak.
So fast forward to 2010, and how is it that you met up with Mila?
Well, this wonderful gentleman by the name of Ben Helfand.
Helfand. Right, from Neighborspace.
From Neighborspace. Said to me, he was aware of the struggles we were having, and he knew that we really, really loved the garden. The children were very, very, you know, into the garden, just weeding it and all. So he said, listen, I can put you in touch with this lady, this organization, with this wonderful lady. And
this
her
nice
name is
lady.
Carol Becker. And so I said, well, fine. But, you know, I want somebody who really wants to work with the children. It's the children's garden. And I don't want, you know, someone to come and they have some other agenda. So.
Well, and what happens sometimes is organizations, they swoop in, they do the job, then they leave, and there's no...
And they're never heard from again.
Never heard from again. No
Absolutely.
Communication with the kids. They don't learn anything, and the garden sits there, and it goes back to weeds.
Absolutely. So we didn't want that. And that's not what happened. That was the best. I mean, the collaboration and the meeting. When I spoke with Carol for the first time, I knew that this was the organization that was going to help us. This is what we were looking for. Mila came in, and I mean, immediately. It's one thing to come in and tell someone how to do something, but they came in and they showed us what to do. They first helped us devise a plan. They stuck right to the plan. It was timely. We gave we were in the process of putting the memorial together inside the flower bed and all that. Mm-hmm. So there was a time constraint there. Carol's team came in, and everything just went on like clockwork. We met the deadline that we had set for the memorial dedication. All of the work that needed to be done in the garden, the mulching, we learned a lot because we had weeds everywhere, and that was just going to be a major problem.
And the thing that impresses me, and you talk about the team, including Lynn Bement, the organic garden coach. Lynn's been associated with Mila for a long time. Pam Wirtz of Grace Landscaping. Grace Kaler from Pizzo
Absolutely.
And Associates. And you were gonna say the word cardboard, and I want people to hear this. How did you get rid of the weeds?
We used cardboard. We used these corrugated boxes, just hundreds and hundreds of boxes to cover the garden space. It measures 50 feet by 100 feet. And we covered this entire space with cardboard boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And we would water them. It took some doing because we didn't know what we were doing. But
Lynn calls it the lasagna method. You know, you're layering stuff on top of the weeds.
Right. From what I understand, you pulled the weeds
no
first.
No herbicides.
Right. No herbicides. You didn't reach for the Roundup. None of that stuff.
Mm-mm.
But you pulled, as Grace, Lynn described it to me, you pull the weeds, then you put the cardboard on top because you got the weeds underneath. When they decompose, they're going to add nutrients to the soil.
Right.
That's what happens.
And then the cardboard breaks down and you put, mulch
we
on.
We got the Care of Trees, very generously donate.
Wonderful
I think
sponsor
they four,
on the show. Yes.
Right. They bought
nine,
four truck, how
nine,
many truckloads?
Nine
truckloads of
mulch
of shredded, you know, bark, trees,
mm-hmm.
and to put on the garden on top of the cardboard.
Uh-huh. And where did you get plants from?
Plants came from Pizzo. They came from Midwest Ground Covers. And
didn't Lurvy's...
Lurvy's donated some of the tools and gloves for the kids because... Well, the kids
had
no tools
gloves.
To work with.
You got to have gloves and tools.
It was like the day before the truck arrived with a semi-load of mulch. I was looking for wheelbarrows, and I called Lurvy's, and I said, help!
So you did this. You got it done in time. And I assume that all along the way, the kids were being taught how to do these things. And we talked about the word sustainability, but this is sustainable, and it's not toxic, and it's caring for the earth in the way you did it. And do you think the kids learned a lesson from that?
I think the kids don't know where things come from. And so this was so important because so many of our students don't realize that even the foods that they eat, I mean, they know, we tell them these things grow, vegetables grow, but they to actually see it and experience it.
And you put some vegetables in the garden,
yes,
too.
Yes, we put vegetables there in the garden, and the children started asking questions and making observations that we were growing cherry tomatoes. They didn't know that they were green at first. Just, I mean, the learning happens when you put children in a natural environment. They just start learning.
You know, the very first thing we did before we even tackled the garlic mustard was you had these raised beds for vegetables.
Yes.
And there was kind of, it looked like really icky old
sand,
topsoil, subsoil in
Nasty.
There. Nasty stuff.
Yeah. And who knows?
Nasty pirate stuff.
And, thank you. See, you're a co-conspirator here, Kim.
Yeah, right.
Arr, we be talking
nasty stuff. And we called Midwest Trading Horticultural Supplies out in St. Charles and said, will you send over some good garden mix, compost and topsoil mixed together.
54 bags.
And they sent over about 54 bags of good stuff.
Yes,
and that's what the vegetables grew
Absolutely.
In.
Absolutely.
And the vegetables grew big enough for the squirrels to come and steal them.
Arr, those squirrels. They're kind of squirrely.
Right.
Listen, by the way, I should get people up to date here. Carol Becker, who just spoke, is the executive director of the Midwest Ecological Landscaping Association. Science teacher Emily Kenny from O'Keefe Elementary School, down the block from the garden we're talking about. We need to bring in right now Teresa Conley, who's also made the trip. And I saw you guys speak at the MELA meeting the other day where the presentations were made, awards about the garden, and you spoke. And you spoke so eloquently. And Teresa, you don't work at the school. You just live in the neighborhood, right?
Yes, I live in the neighborhood.
What's the difference in the neighborhood from this garden being revived?
Well, the difference is it's a tremendous, just a beautiful scene to see now when you come in the garden. What we saw before MELA came was that we had all weeds and everything, and it was an eyesore to the community. And then we all got together and we worked on the cardboarding, which I have to tell you, the people in the two condominiums were very upset with us because they said, well, I don't know what this is going for, what you're doing with this, but this is not going to last. I mean, you know, we come past, and it looks worse than it did before.
Well, yeah, because we got boxes and boxes
cardboard.
And they saw us. We kept watering the cardboard and everything, getting everything ready. So when the mulch came and they saw the first two batches being put down, then it dawned on them, okay, this is going to be really, really, really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And as it progressed, it came on and it became just beautiful. So at the end of the second day, they could see the difference from what was before and what was going to be. And it started a chain of helping. The community would come out and they would help. They would ask us if we needed anything.
Really? So the community, not just the students, but the community started to get involved.
The community and the students. The students would stay well until the night because it was in the summer and the school was over with. And they would get out. Those who had to go to summer school would come later.
Mm-hmm.
And they would work until sundown. And it was just a beautiful thing to see. People would drive past the neighborhood and they would look and they would say, well, what's going on? And we were getting ready for the memorial for Troy, for the dedication for Troy. And they just loved it. And so we all learned something from that. And the community has been greatly involved. And they come, and we have people saying, next year, I want to come out and help.
And the question I have to ask about that, though, is that who's going to handle it? Because community gardens only exist because of the community. If you don't have the people who are willing to come and work, it can go back to weeds. How are you going to make sure that people stay involved?
Well, I've been the president for 2 years of the O'Keefe Garden.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
No.
She's right here.
Yes. Yes, sir.
And then there's Andre.
The
you have
president.
To hear about Andre.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm not the president. I'm the chairperson. Andre is the president.
Oh. Okay.
You know what? I get confused because I always say I'm the president. But Andre
you know
is
what?
The president.
You know what? You know, Therese, everybody wants to say I'm the president.
That's just
yeah.
Andre
is 16 years old, and he does a fantastic job. When I come home from work, I usually will go to the garden. Well, Andre has beaten me there because he's come home from school early.
Mm-hmm.
And so he'll say, well, Miss C, we need to do this and this and this. And I did. I watered the plants, and we watered the vegetables, and we've gotten the leaves and put them in the bags. So Andre is just a phenomenal help with his brother,
and
Kyle.
Other kids.
Yeah, and they just
the kids have gotten involved, the community's got involved, the students have gotten involved. It'll be interesting to see what happens when, as the students graduate and leave O'Keefe and move on. Do most of them live in the neighborhood that go to
yes.
O'Keefe?
Yeah,
okay.
Yes.
And but so it'll be interesting to see if they continue to be involved with the garden.
Some have already.
You can pull that around. Yes.
Some of the students have already graduated. They graduated last year, and they're still working in the garden now.
Mm-hmm.
the garden has become the center. It's kind of the social center of the community now. The children go there and play games, mm-hmm. Monopoly, dominoes. We have Kool-Aid and lemonade for them, and they hang out there and they work there.
And there's a monument to Troy Law,
right.
Yes. In the garden now.
And what you know, a lot is being made here about how much Mila has done for the community, but I have to say that the community is giving something really great back to Mila, because we need this garden as a site where we can take our members to show them a practical applications of sustainability. They can't wait to go see it.
That's fabulous. It's a great story all the way around. Carol Becker, executive director of Mila, Emily Kenny, who's the, and I got to play this one more time, the science teacher. I didn't hear that. I want to hear that again.
Science.
Okay. Science teacher at O'Keefe Elementary School, and Teresa Conley from the neighborhood, and the chair of the, not the president. Don't anybody be confused. Andre's the
president.
The president, all right? Andre, if you're listening, she didn't mean it. It was just a slip, all right? But thank you all for coming to the studio. Oh, I'm going to do some business here, but before you leave, I've got... Wait a second, I just threw it in the bag here. I don't do this often, and I've got a couple of copies of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine that I want
you guys to have with you,
and you know, learn a little more about gardening, and you can apply it to the garden. Congratulations! You guys should check back with me next year and let me know how things are going. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thanks again. All right. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We're going to be getting to Rick DeMaio weather in just a second. It's fall planting time at Sid's Greenhouses and Garden Center. And now through October 2nd, you'll find everything you need to get your home and garden ready for the season, like garden mums, big, beautiful, and bursting with mum-tastic fall colors. Arr! Mum-tastic is what we call them. This week, you'll also save up to 50% from most remaining nursery stock, and Sid's entire stock of perennials is buy one, get one free. See, you know, people have those gardens. I it's time for me to get my mums in my yard. My yard looks really sad right now. Sid's also has a huge selection of tulips, daffodils, iris, and more. On Saturday, next Saturday, September 25th, as part of Sid's Dutch Days event, stop by either store from 11:30 to 1 for a hot dog. Arr! I do be liking a hot dog on a hot Saturday afternoon. And you get a hot dog and a drink for $1. Also attend one of their free bulb seminars or the fall plant potting party to get your pots and containers planted up for fall. Visit SIDSonline.com for event times and information and to download the coupon for $10 off your purchase. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. Remember, when you're done planting, this is something, Carol, that you would appreciate. When you're done, you can bring your plastic pots and cell packs to SIDS for recycling. And Carol, of course, is applauding that.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A+ by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
We're 3/4 of the way through September, and maybe you should be thinking spring. What I mean is that if you improve your soil now, you will be ahead of the game next year. One of the best things you can do is to add a layer of Back to Nature cotton burr compost to your garden bed or lawn now. Cotton burr compost is a great food source for beneficial soil organisms. It's those organisms that are making your plants healthy. Back to Nature cotton burr compost feeds the organisms that feed your plants. Late summer and early fall is a great time to rejuvenate your soil and prepare it for the spring. Since we're in prime time for lawn care, one of the best ways to improve your soil is to use nature's Blend with Alfalfa and Humate by Back to Nature. Give both products a try. Go to backtonaturecompost.com to find the locations and the specific products they carry. Or go to Pesci's in Des Plaines and Lake Geneva, Alsip Home and Nursery in Frankfort and St. John, Indiana, and Mikey Nursery in Niles. You'd be listening to Talk Like a Pirate Day on Chicago. Is being a pirate progressive, Leah? I'm not exactly sure. I don't think that's
I think that's a football team, the Progressive Pirates. Or maybe.
Do you think we can get DeMaio to talk like a pirate?
Let's try.
All right, here we go. We go to line two. Are we be bringing in meteorologist Rick DeMaio? How be, scurvy dog?
Probably could have a couple of days ago, and I had a nasty cold and cough. I was talking like a pirate with a lot of ease, Mike. Let's put it that way.
I tell you what, just give me an R.
R. That
was pretty good.
All right.
Yeah, I know. Well, it doesn't take much when you have you're in day six of a 5-day cold.
Wow, everybody's getting sick. You know, Heather's not here. Hers is not a cold, though. It's some sort of intestinal thing that's just really, really nasty.
That's good. Yeah.
How be other than the cold? It's we got a little rain yesterday. The weather's not too bad. We're
You know, everybody was talking about this 2-day, you know, showers and thunderstorms and the most rain we've had. We had 3/10 of an inch of rain. But we did have some nice thunderstorm yesterday. I know. I was like, I'm watching some people last night. I'm like, it's not going to be that bad. In fact, you know, we've basically cleared out. So,
you know, we got almost no rain yesterday, but I managed to catch all of it. I rode my bike down to Garfield Park Conservatory about 10:15 yesterday morning, which was like perfect timing to get caught in the rainstorm.
Oh, yeah.
They had the county fair in the parking lot of Garfield Park Conservatory, which was really fun because I was in the bug booth.
Nice.
I was handling tarantulas and these huge millipedes, African and North American. Yeah, millipedes the size of a hot dog, basically. I mean, in girth and longer than that. Wow. And Madagascar hissing cockroaches.
Oh,
cool
nice.
Stuff.
That was really neat, yeah.
That was fun.
You just gagged. Did you try to eat it or something?
No.
Those awful those shows.
Oh, I love that stuff. So
I caught a gray garage sale. There was a yard sale, and it started raining. I'm like, what are they going to do with all that stuff and all that furniture? But it happened to be right next to the Bloomingdale Trail Viaduct, so they just moved everything right underneath the bridge, the viaduct. It was awesome.
But you're right.
The reason why I was there was because it was outside at the last garage sale, and then I just bring it out again the next garage. So that's kind of how that works, I think.
But you're right. It wasn't a whole lot of rain. Are we down a little bit of rain?
Since the 18-inch deluge that we had during the course of June and July, we've had only about 3 or 4 inches of rain, Mike, but almost half of that came in one day. So we've had a lot of evaporation taking place. I know for sure that we've had a lot of evaporation because the ground is so dry. If you try to walk through some of these fields with the dog that has a lot of fur on him, mm-hmm. they get a little burr. Have you noticed those little spindly things?
No, I haven't been walking through too many fields lately, I guess.
Well, you need to get out more, my friend.
Yeah, I know. Hey, listen, I've been dealing with the tarantulas, okay?
Oh, I know. I know. That's pretty cool stuff. But, between that and also the fact that we've had, this, you know, the temperatures are fairly warm in the month of August. We had readings generally 5 degrees above normal. Even though it's been cool in September, it's still been somewhat dry. So we can use the rain. I think we'll get maybe another band of a couple light sprinkles come through here this afternoon. But by and large, Mike, the system is basically done with us. But it's just going in on the chilly side with readings only in the lower 60s. Today. Some people like it, but you know, the odd thing about it, this is going down as the unofficial, or I say not unofficial, but the official last day of summer 2010. Obviously, the equinox arrives 10:09 Tuesday night as we transition from more light to less light into the second half of the season. So always always somewhat of depressing thought to think that summer is ending, and it's definitely going out with a bang.
Hey, you know what, Rick? You're always a downer, which we appreciate.
I don't want to be a downer. I mean, if you think about it, this summer was, I think on a scale of 1 to 10, was like a 9.5.
It was pretty good, except for the people who got totally flooded out. That, I mean, I was talking to a guy the other day who lives Stickney Way, and his basement took 14 inches of rain in that big storm. And he's been cleaning it ever since, and he still can't, you know, the mold is hiding on him, and he can't find the one place where it's still there, you know.
Terrible, yeah. And I know some people are still waiting for the, you know, the state aid to come through, or at least the federal aid, and I know that's been a bit of a problem. But, yeah, you have to think about that overall. When you have a flooding situation, it doesn't go away. You do that old smell test where you go down like about a month later after exhausting about two boxes of that little powder stuff that looks like it's going to get everything out of the carpet, and you do, oh, no, it still smells. I think a lot of people definitely had to deal with that. But this stuff that's coming through now is just basically light rain. Nothing in the way of any flooding.
Okay. I'm going to take a short break. And when we come back, give us a brief look at colors and a forecast. Yeah. How does that sound?
We'll do that. Yeah.
All right. Thanks. That's Rick DeMaio Weather. We'll have the forecast in just a sec. Now, it's likely that you or someone you know has battled the big BC, breast cancer. Or might have to one day, God forbid. From October 1st to October 10th, you can help find a cure by bringing home a pink hydrangea from Lurvy Landscape Supply and Garden Center. As part of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, Lurvy's is donating $3 from every sale of a pink hydrangea variety called Invincible Spirit to the Breast Cancer Foundation. This science-driven perennial, a hot pink version of the hardy white hydrangea Annabelle, is a durable choice for both fresh and dried arrangements, and it will bloom up until and even after the harshest of winters. The kickoff party for Pink Wink. Pink Wink? Pink Week! I'm sorry. Pink Week at Lurvy's is Friday, October 1st from 5 to 7 p.m. Now, Lurvy's is located at 2550 East Dempster Street in Des Plaines, Illinois. For more information, visit lurvys.com. That's Lurvys.com. Be a gardener for life, and I like that pun. A gardener for life by purchasing a pink Invincible Spirit hydrangea from Lurvy Landscape Supply and Garden Center from October 1st to October 10th. And if you wear pink during this time, you get 10% off any purchase. Lurvy's is a proud sponsor of the Breast Cancer Research Foundation.
Hey gardeners, want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees and the Morton Arboretum. I have to admit that I borrowed from something they sent me this week. Now, have you noticed that your oak trees have produced a lot of acorns this year? It's called a mast year, M-A-S-T. Arr! We have the masts on the ships! See, everything goes back to Talk Like a Pirate Day. Arr! It's a heavy year of production. It's a heavy year, a year of heavy production that apparently helps to guarantee a species' survival. Now, the good news is that it doesn't harm the trees or rob them of the energy they need to leaf out next spring. You're just going to have a lot of nuts in your yard. With 9 locations, the Care of Trees has been serving Chicagoland for 60 years, putting you and your trees first. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard or you're changing your landscaping, invite the certified arborist, and that's the key. They are certified arborists at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220, The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. Arr, I know why you be getting up. To listen to the Mike Novak Show.
Arborists.
Arborists. The Care of Tree. Oh, I forgot to do that too. The certified arborists at the Care of Trees. Yes, it is Talk Like a Pirate Day on Sunday, October 19th. And by the way, what was
it? It's September.
Oh, it is September.
Yeah.
I'm ahead of myself there. On September 19th, I don't know why it's October. It's not October. Boy, that gets annoying really quick, doesn't it?
No, not yet.
Okay.
But soon.
Second hour. Yeah, second hour is when it will get annoying. And by the way, that's Carol Becker from the Midwest Ecological Landscaping Association. We're going to have some information from her when we get back to her in just a second. Rick, what kind of colors can we expect this year? Do you have any idea?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be a banner year. I think as long as we continue to have some dry weather and we don't get too much wind and the temperatures don't get too warm.
Any other caveats you care to throw in there?
Well, no. There's a lot of science behind a nice, not so much a nice fall foliage season, but a lengthy one as well. And that's the real key, is not to have, all of a sudden a lot of nice trees blooming out, but not a lot of windstorms coming through that obviously knocks leaves off the trees. There are a lot of caveats there. In fact, if you the travelwisconsin.com website, they have an amazing fall color report. Every year they just do a better and better job.
Give me website again.
Sure, it's travelwisconsin.com.
Okay.
Travelwisconsin.com. I'll throw it on my website. And it's really great because not only do they start out with accommodations, art and culture, entertainment attractions, food and drink with all these links on the left side. Right in the middle of the website, you can basically slide your mouse over these individual counties, and it'll pull up the information relating to how close they are to peak, what trees are in color, what road to take. It's really one of the best sites out there. Illinois obviously doesn't have as much of a, fall foliage as far as the aerial coverage as say Wisconsin or Minnesota or obviously Michigan does, but the site that Wisconsin puts out to me is the best. But you got to go all the way northward to counties like Forest County, Iron County, which is basically rimming the UP of Michigan. This is about probably a good hour and a half to 2 hour drive northwest of Green Bay. So obviously Chicago to Green Bay, you can get there in about 2.5 to 3 hours. But once you get off the road, off that main road, 43, I believe it is, takes a little bit longer to get through. And you know what? If you're traveling up into northern Wisconsin, you don't want to be going too fast. This
No.
is one of those areas where you just kind of take it easy, stop off here. You really don't have a plan. But you can get up there and probably see maybe 25 to about 50% coverage of peak fall colors, probably more than maples right now, Mike. But we're still looking at least another 2 or 3 weeks before they really start to change. However, I've noticed, and I know you talked about it as well, the recent dry weather and the recent warm weather in August has actually accelerated some of the smaller trees, even up and down the Chicago River. I noticed yesterday when I was walking the dog, I was like,
yeah,
that's kind of nice there. So I think we're really going to have a good season. I'm looking at probably about an 8 out of 10 compared to recent years, mainly because we had so much rain early. And we've had that nice period of dry, warm weather in the month of September.
Well, you're not such a downer after all. Okay.
No, not at all. Not at all.
All right. So what's the forecast look like for this week?
A little bit of clouds, a little bit of sunshine today, and just a little bit of rain. But temperatures are probably the coolest they've been in about 4 months. Normal high, speaking of a pirate there, normal high is about 72. I'm probably making only up to about 64 today. But we completely reverse the trend. We go back into the upper 60s, the low to mid-70s tomorrow. And then low 80s, believe it or not. I wouldn't be surprised if we get close to 85 on Tuesday.
Arr.
Yeah, real good stuff. Mid-70s Wednesday, maybe even upper 70s on Friday. So I think much of the week between Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday looked very, very nice. I was hoping that some of the warmth from the hurricanes, particularly Igor, was going to be able to hold some of this cold air in, but it's not doing it. I gave my first preview of the winter season to a bunch of snowplow operators this past Friday, and I'm going to update that again for next Friday, and if you want, I could even clue you in next Sunday, Mike, on what I think the upcoming winter season is going
to be. Exactly. See, let's just go from 1 week of fall and colors next week to snow. Hey, this just this is how fast we move on this show.
People like to know about that stuff.
No, that's a great idea. I think that would be fabulous. Oh, it sounds like go ahead. Sorry.
Just to let everybody know, the equinox arrives at 10:09 p.m. here in Chicago Tuesday night. That's the point when the sun is directly over the equator.
And you'll know that in Chicago, you'll know that because you look down the east-west streets and the sun will set directly in the middle of the street.
More or less. Directly in the middle, more or less.
Or
when it rises. That's why a lot of times you hear this time of the year, sunshine delay is on the inbound Eisenhower and the Stevenson, because it's basically shining right
It's
down
nasty,
the
nasty yeah, stuff. And they won't set directly down Archer or Lincoln or Elston.
Or Milwaukee.
Not unless you tilt your head a little bit.
Yeah.
Or Ogden.
All right. That's Rick DeMaio. You can catch his weather forecast every week on the Mike Novak Show sometime around, who knows, after 9:30. But you go to DeMaioWeather.com. You on Channel 2 lately?
I was on last Sunday, but not for a while. It looks like things are going to be kind of quiet. And that's all right. I have lots of schoolwork to do. Mike.
Yes, you do. Get your homework done and your classwork. We will talk next week, Rick.
Thanks, Mr. Novak.
Say R. Oh, too late. Didn't get another R. At lawn planting time, people ask me questions like, can I overseed my lawn with EcoLawn and let it gradually take over? The answer is yes, R. It might take several years to have a true eco lawn, but it will happen if you overseed eco lawn twice a year in the fall and the spring, which means you need to start right now. Rake or power rake that unhappy lawn, add a little compost, overseed with eco lawn, and keep it moist until you can cut it a couple of times. Go to ecolawn.com to get more information. Eco lawn is available at Lake Street Landscape Supply, 1810 West Lake Street in Chicago, or visit ecolawn.com. Now, Bobix wants to know if you are as smart as the critters who want to chow down on your plants in your yard. Okay, we're not going to compare IQ scores, but there are some things you need to be aware of when you do battle with neighborhood critters. For instance, you can put plants in your yard that some sources consider, quote, critter resistant. However, like everything in life, that's a relative concept. Deer, rabbits, and other critters have preferences like people do. And when foliage is in short supply, they will eat anything they can sink their teeth into. Here's something else you need to know about, and that's the deer population. Have you been paying attention in your area? I understand they're going to have some deer culling in the Chicago area. Also, are you on a deer trail? That might not be the smartest place to plant certain species. That's one of the reasons you might not want to guess how to protect your plants, but talk to the experts at Bobix. Give them a call, 800-792-4449. 800-792-4449. You can go to Bobix.com to get the number, B-O-B-B-E-X.com. Of course, in addition to online, Bobix is available only at your local independent garden center. For example, Thistle Stop Garden Shop in Yorkville, Illinois. Ferraro Garden Spot in Northbrook, Illinois. Remember, plants thrive and survive with Bobix. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We're back after CNN News at the top of the hour. Don't forget, this is our new time spot, 9 to 11 a.m. Tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell your cab driver, tell your auto mechanic.
Carol, and the pirates.
And what?
And tell the pirates.
And tell the pirates. Arr. Carol Becker from the Midwest Ecological Landscaping Association is still in the studio because she just refuses to leave. but that's okay. Don't make faces at me. And it is Talk Like a Pirate Day, in case you wonder why I keep doing that. Carol. there's ways, you know, one of the things we talk about is the industry being interested in what Mila's doing, but the average homeowner should be as well. And what can they learn from Mila?
Absolutely. And we now have an online searchable database that homeowners can utilize to find a professional who will use sustainable practices in their yards. And, you know, to search our database, you go to www.melaweb.org and click on community, and you'll see a list of the arborists, public gardens, government associations, growers and nurseries. We have 14 of them. Architects or designers, we have over 20 listed. Contractors, over 30. Media, we only have one. That's you, Mike. We have manufacturers of landscape supplies and suppliers. You can find the right professional there to do the work that you need to have done on your landscape and ensure that
and done in an
sustainable way.
Right, sustainable,
that's right.
Environmentally friendly,
that's
you
right.
know, however you want to describe it. But you're not going to be afraid to talk to them about chemicals and say, is it okay if we don't use chemicals?
Right,
and they
exactly.
will talk to you about alternatives.
Whatever your question is about sustainability, you know, can I take care of my lawn without chemicals? How can I improve the flower beds so that my flowers do better? How do I make compost? All those
How
kinds of questions.
How do I improve my soil, you know?
Yeah.
Because everything starts with the soil, as we
That's
know.
Right. That's right.
And I have that link, Carol, up on my website,
Great.
MikeNovak.net.
Great.
Go to this week's show. The Mila community page link is right there. And if you start planning for next year. This,
right.
When you want to get a hold of somebody, just talk to somebody and see what they have to say. And you might find that it's a little different from your average experience.
That's it.
All
Thank
right.
you very much, Mike.
Now you can leave, Carol. Carol Becker from the Midwest Ecological Landscaping Association. All right, in the next hour, we're going to talk about the jewel in Chicago's downtown, Lurie Garden. And we'll also talk about the oil spill that happened out in the suburbs of Chicago and what that means for you and gas prices. It's the Mike Novak Show. Stick around. We will be back right after CNN News.
Section 3. Structure. The most common pirate verb is to be, as in the singular,
this grog be warm,
or the plural,
these apples be rotten.
Note the sentence structure, with the noun always before the adjective.
That there be a buxom wench.
Is wrong.
That there wench be buxom.
Is correct. Here is an example of conjugating tenses. The past.
I been plundering.
The present.
I be plundering.
And the future.
I gonna be plundering.
The personal pronoun is either I or me as a possessive, as in me grog, me booty, and me timbers. Section 4. R. You may be wondering why R deserves its own section. But this simple sound is an integral part of pirate speech. In fact, there are several varieties of R, being R, Yar, and Har.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by Back to Nature Compost. Life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil. And by Ecolon, the ultimate low-maintenance, drought-tolerant lawn. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
See, I bet you didn't know that R. Slide that microphone over to Leah Petrujak, who is filling in for Heather Fry today. Heather, if you're listening, I hope you're not. I hope you're just sleeping, but if you're listening, hope you're feeling better.
Hi, Heather.
But you didn't know that R had its own, was its own section in pirate speak, did you?
No.
It's what most people.
We should post that on the site.
It's one day only. We got one more hour that we have to deal with talking like a pirate.
I was trying to think of magnificent. I was trying to think of different adjectives like
Arr, must.
Arr,
me mateys.
Magnificent.
Magnificent. No, it doesn't make any sense at all. It doesn't make any sense. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM. And you might want to slide that back around because Jennifer Davitt, and it turns, you know, this is lately what I've been doing is mispronouncing everybody's name before they come on the show, and then they all correct. You can pull that microphone just a little bit closer. And she is the chief horticulturist at the Lurie Garden in Millennium Park, and I said earlier that it's the jewel of gardens in Chicago. And Leah said, isn't it the Dominic's? Ba-dum-bum. Shh, thank you. No, that's not what I meant. I mean it as this beautiful place that probably more people, probably the most visited garden in the area, I would think. Don't you think, Jennifer?
Yeah, definitely. You know, the park gets over 4 million visitors a year, and mm-hmm. I would guess at least half of them come through the garden. So we are one of the most visible gardens in Chicago.
Now, that's got to put a lot of pressure on you. I would pull the mic just a tad closer there. You can speak right into that, baby. There you go. Here you come into town. You were at the Fairchild Tropical Botanical Garden in Miami, Florida. Now, you're dealing with tropicals, and all of a sudden you're dealing with Midwest perennials. And I know you're from the Midwest originally, right?
I am. I was born in Chicago in Jefferson Park.
Okay,
lived
so
here.
You're a native. But you've been dealing with tropicals for a bunch of years. Did you do a 180 and have to? Did you get whiplash coming back here?
It came back pretty naturally because I grew up here in Chicago and then moved to Ohio, where I spent a lot of time working in garden centers and nurseries. And so that's where I really learned all of my perennial plantings and plants native to this area. So it came back pretty well. And, you know, I'm just loving being in Chicago, being out, you know, one of the best gardens in the country. And, you know, it's a beautiful place. And I love the fact that we get so many visitors.
You know, this is not fair, actually, because here you come back here. You're in charge of this big, beautiful garden. You didn't even have to plant it. It was already there. And now you just have to sort of look after it and, I don't know, tweak here, prune something here, you know, do some deadheading. Actually, they don't like to do deadheading very much. You know, I've been in the garden many times, and I know Roy Diblick, who grew like 20,000 of the plants that are in the Lurie Garden. And I was on a tour this summer, and he was explaining things. And it's very selective, isn't it? Because I know that if you've never been to the Lurie Garden, you're listening to the show right now, go right now, because this is a great time of year to see it. The colors, the muted colors are just so beautiful. Even as we get into October, it's just a fabulous place to visit. But as he explained, it's in many ways a sustainable garden. There's that word again that we've been using today. Which means that you like a lot of the plants to sort of collapse on their own weight. You're not manipulating them too much, but you do want to manipulate some so that others pop up. How do you make those decisions?
Right. You know, it's a real balance that you have to strike between deciding, you know, what plants you might want to deadhead or cut back a little, or certain things, you know, you want to grow over into the path so you feel it's a little more wild.
Mm-hmm.
But then certain things you do need to cut back and say, this is actually getting in the way of the visitor, maybe in, you know, detracting from their visit. So you really need to spend a lot of time walking through the garden, watching visitors, where they're going, where they're stopping, and looking at things to try and get a real sense for, you know, what areas you need to maybe hone in on a little more tightly,
mm-hmm.
and what areas you can kind of let go and be a little more wild.
And you don't want those people living in the condos across the street saying, oh, that's messy. We don't want native plants. Can we put the lawn back in? Actually,
yeah.
Actually, you've got a great lawn, and it is the great lawn by the Geary
right.
Sculpture there and in the Pritzker Pavilion.
Right. So people can get their lawn fix over there and then come over to the garden and see more of a wild habitat that does look beautiful throughout all of the seasons. You know, that's one of the things because, as you mentioned, we do leave all of our perennials up through the winter. So it's a really beautiful place to visit in December and January and February because the snow falls, lands on top of the seed heads and the grasses, and it's almost as magical then as it is in the warmer weather.
And there's fewer people.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great time to visit in the winter because there's fewer people there. But that's a really good point for folks who have gardens and who are neatness freaks and decide in the fall, I got to cut it all down and it's got to be bare. You're missing something important.
Right. You are. And that's, you know, one of the things that I love about the Lurie is that we have this opportunity to show people another way to garden that's maybe more sustainable and to sort of educate them about different styles of gardening and what you can do that's maybe different from a traditional garden. And so we do leave all of that material up, and it really is beautiful and adds more to your garden. And then it gets you out, you know, in the beginning of March, you know, you want to be outside. You've been inside all winter. So you can get out there and start doing all of your cutback at that time of the year and kind of ease into the gardening season.
By the way, if anybody's got any questions about how they would handle some of their perennials at this time of year, should I cut back? Should I not? What should I leave for the spring? When should I cut them back? This is the person to talk to because the Lurie Garden has so many different kinds of perennials. And that's the fascinating thing about it is there are some shrubs and trees, but the bulk of the garden is what we call now I can't even the phrase just went out of my head. The perennials that fall, you know what I'm talking about, herbaceous perennials.
Yeah.
That collapse on their own weight at some point and renew themselves in the spring. Give us a call, 773-838-9278, 773-838-WCPT. That's Jennifer Davitt, not Davitt or David. It's Davitt. And she is the chief horticulturist at Lurie Garden. Also in studio, and I don't usually do this, you know how
dang
that,
it, Mike.
Sue Markgraff from, you know, I don't let PR types come on my show.
I'm not a PR type. I'm a gardener.
Yeah.
I just am a mouthpiece for green. That's all. And if you tell me there's a tarantula in here, I'm leaving.
Yeah, but I'm going to make you talk like a pirate.
All I can do is my southern accent.
No, you can do R. Come on, do R.
R. Shiver me timbers.
Jennifer, can you give me an R?
R.
Leah, that's just sad. Those are the two saddest R's I've ever heard in my life.
Southern pirate?
Southern pirate. Yeah, can you do the southern pirate?
I'm not even going to try.
As I said, that's Sue Markgraff, and I've known Sue for many, many years, and she's with Markgraff PR.
Greenmark.
Greenmark PR. And I knew I was going to get that wrong. Sue goes back to, she worked at the Chicago Botanic Garden, and where else? Where have you done?
Oh, I've spent my whole career in agriculture of some sort for the dairy industry and then also
really?
As a newspaper. Yes,
yeah.
Yes. And then as a newspaper.
Wait, that's how you know Max Armstrong, right?
Yeah, okay. I know Max, yeah.
Yeah.
And
he works at Gargantua Radio down the dial.
Yes,
I hate to say his name out loud. But
yeah, that voice can melt me in an instant.
Yeah,
so
my,
can yours, Mike.
Yeah, you know, nice try, but that didn't. That didn't do it. Sue, she's always into something green.
Yes.
In fact, I remember once on a show, you and our buddy in the
show. Kathy Edmond.
Kathy Edmond.
Yeah, we want our own show, by the way.
Go ahead. Go get it. Go sell some advertising, you know? You can just, you know, you got the money. You can do anything. You and Kathy Edmond, you guys would be very funny on a show.
Yes, we would be. But Lurie Garden is one of my clients, by the way, and that's why I'm here. I wasn't intending to be on air, but I'm here to support Jennifer.
Well, you know, I'm just going to turn on the mic and put you on the spot.
I should have stayed in the coffee room.
yes, you should have. No, I'm glad you're here.
Thank you for having us on today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I want to get back to talking about the Lurie Garden and some of the aspects of it and the things that are going on right now that folks might find fascinating, and what they might enjoy seeing, you know, when they come down. The weather's perfect.
Yeah, right now, I mean, we have a lot of perennials blooming, and also all the grasses are coming into full bloom.
That's the thing about this time of year, the grasses. Yeah, this is their time of year, really,
yeah.
Isn't it?
And they're just beautiful. And then combine that with the goldenrod and the asters and some of
What'd you call me? Oh, I'm sorry.
As well as some of the other fall blooming perennials, it's really a beautiful time to come into the garden. We also have tons of wildlife in the garden. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of butterflies, bees, birds. You know, right now is the time for fall migration for the birds. So it's a great time to come into the garden. I will recommend to come early in the morning, and you will see a lot of birds in the garden.
Well, hey, hold on to that thought, okay? We'll get back to that, and we'll talk about the various things that you might see at the Lurie Garden. Jennifer mentioned, it's fall. It's fall planting time at Sid's Greenhouses and Garden Center. And now through October 2nd, you'll find everything you need to get your home and garden ready for the season, like fall garden mums, which, you know, they're one of the classics. They're one of the standbys that you use in your garden at this time of year. Big, beautiful, and bursting with mum-tastic fall colors. This week, you'll also save up to 50% on most remaining nursery stock, and Sid's entire stock of perennials is buy one, get one free, since we're talking about perennials. Now is also the time to plant spring blooming fall bulbs. Sid's has a huge selection available, including tulips, daffodils, iris, and more. On Saturday, September 25th, as part of Sid's Dutch Days event, stop by either store from 11:30 to 1 for a hot dog and a drink for $1. Also attend one of their free bulb seminars or the fall plant potting party to get your pots and containers planted up for fall. Visit SIDSonline.com for event times and information and to download the coupon for $10 off your purchase. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. Remember, when you're done planting, bring your plastic pots and cell packs back to SIDS for recycling.
Hey gardeners, want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
The September-October issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine is on the stands. And if you have a Zone 5 garden, and unless you're listening to me on the internets from far, far away, you probably have one, you should grab a copy. I guess that's a question I should ask you, Jennifer. There's a controversy about, are we still Zone 5 here? Are we Zone 6? How do you treat it when you're working in the garden?
Well, we have a unique environment at the Lurie Garden because we are a rooftop garden.
That's
and
true.
So our soils stay a little bit warmer than the traditional ground. So if you have a regular garden, we're a little bit warmer. So we can grow some things in the Lurie that you can't grow in other places. But, you know, they are saying that Chicago is moving towards Zone 6, and I think within a few years, you will be able to grow different plants here that you haven't been able to grow in the past. So that's one thing to think about.
It is to think about in terms of the future. But for now, folks, we're Zone 5, okay? Now, there are answers in the Chicagoland Gardening Magazine issue that's out right now that I get all the time. The gardening questions, like how your garden and your dog can live together in harmony. Hint, they can. And whether you can grow lemons in Chicago. Hint, you can, and maybe even indoors. And whether you can grow a low-maintenance, no-lawn garden in the city that looks fabulous. Hint, Alderman Ed Burke will tell you that if you work with my buddy Roy Diblick, it's an emphatic yes. And then there's my column on the inside back page. People ask me all the time, huh? And my response is, What do you think? And that usually calms them down. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine is on newsstands all over the area, but you can subscribe and have it delivered to your door. Go to ChicagolandGardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. In the studio, I have Jennifer Davitt, who is the chief horticulturist at the Lurie Garden in Millennium Park. We had a question that came in earlier from a bus driver from Cicero. And since you've worked with tropicals and you've probably worked in greenhouses, he's trying to extend the gardening season with, and maybe even Sue Markgraf, you can jump in and help us with this. How can you extend the gardening season with greenhouses? How do you set up a greenhouse? I mean, it sound, you know, a real greenhouse costs a lot of money, but there are hoop houses and other things that you can buy at garden supply centers that are less involved. I mean, if you're going to do a real greenhouse, you got to have heat of some sort. But even just having plastic, you can do that.
You can. I think, you know, one of the things you really want to think about is if you are going to put in a greenhouse, make sure you do it in an area in your yard that gets the most sun as possible. Because if you want to try and grow some of those tropicals, that can really be the limiting factor. Besides the temperature is also the amount of sun that they need. So be sure to, you know, factor that in. I've never, you know, I was always working in places where we always had existing greenhouses, so I've never put one in from scratch.
Have you ever worked with greenhouses out in the field that are not, you know, large structures existing, but portable greenhouses?
You know, to be honest, I haven't really worked with portable greenhouses. In some places, I've done things where, you know, obviously being in South Florida, we could just put up like plastic around, put up plastic walls temporarily through the winter to, you know, kind of get some things through December and January.
Mm-hmm. Which is a lot easier in Florida than
it is in
Illinois.
In Florida. you know, if you want to extend the gardening season, I would also think about doing, you know, similar to what we do with the Lurie Garden, where you do leave your perennials up, put in a lot of grasses or things that provide color and interest throughout the seasons instead of maybe installing a greenhouse, which is going to be a lot more time and money and also resource dependent. Mm-hmm. So I would look to, you know, different plants that will provide you that seasonal interest. You know, one of my favorite early spring blooming plant, kind of late winter, early spring, is the witch hazel. You know, try, you know, you can add some things like that that will bloom early. And I would also amend with some of the early blooming bulbs and then also put in some grasses that'll give you winter interest. So I would think about doing that as well as if you want to do a greenhouse.
In terms of plant selection, the beauty of Chicago, and this is my mantra, is we have it all. We have all kinds of styles of gardening from the more naturalistic garden like the Lurie Garden to the High Hort Garden up in Glencoe that I used to work for to a beautiful indoor glass house at the Garfield Park Conservatory. So my advice would be visit those places and see what those plants look like in a more mature state before you invest in them when they're babies and try to care for them over winter.
Yes.
Santa, the bus driver just called in again, and he said, what about running heat?
Oh, see, now, Santo, the bus driver, just called back. He's talking about running heat. He wants something really...
He's hardcore.
Yeah, he is hardcore. He's got to get that... you know what, Santo, that's another discussion with people who do this professionally. And give me a holler, mike@mikenovak.net. Write me an email. And I've got friends who have done that, have built greenhouses. I know that... You know, like Joe Hygin out at Shady Hill Gardens in Batavia. No, not in Batavia anymore. They're in Elburn. And they have a state-of-the-art greenhouse, and I was just there earlier this year, and it's fabulous to watch. But that sucker It's like the Crystal Palace, if you've ever been out there. And it's a great place to go to just, in fact, you could probably go out there today and buy some great plants. Love going out there. And that's a real greenhouse. So that's a different story from what most gardeners are going to deal with, which is putting some plastic in their yard. I've got one, Ed Curran, who does weather in Chicago also. A few years ago, he sends me a message or calls or something and says, I got one of these portable greenhouses. Do you want it? I'm like, sure, you know. And it's about 7 feet tall and about 6 feet long and about 6 feet wide. I mean, the thing, and it has shelves on it, and you set the whole thing up. Now, the problem is it takes up half the yard. But and I put it up 1 year, and it killed all the lawn underneath it. And then I thought, well, I got to find a place to do it. I got no place to put it. But you can get things like that, too, which are... And it has like a zipper door on it, so it keeps the heat in. You can do that for your yard, but most people want something that's pretty simple. Let's see. We've got another phone call. Let us go to Mickey in Downers Grove. How you doing, Mickey?
Doing great, thanks.
You've got a question about cutting back plants. It's right on target here.
Okay. Well, I have spirea, and I wondered if I should cut it back. I've only ever trimmed out the deadwood, but I've never cut the entire plant back, but it's gotten too large. And I'm wondering if I should cut it back to the ground now or wait till the spring.
That's a good question.
Very good.
Jennifer, are we putting you on the spot here?
Yeah, it's a spirea, you said?
Yes.
I would be inclined to wait until the spring to cut it back. What I don't recall exactly for spirea when they set the buds for spring bloom.
Well, now from what I understand, and I'm checking this out, I'm going to help you out a little bit here, because I know that you've been dealing with different kinds of plants, especially in the
My focus right now is mainly on perennials, so that's sort of where my focus is.
And of course, a spirea is considered more of a shrub.
Right.
Now this is what I've done before with spireas, I'm checking this out if I can get the ad to get out of my way here online. It says the best time to prune a spirea is late spring after the blooms have faded, and you'll get a second flush of blooms is what I'm used to. The problem, I think, right now, if you prune, I got a feeling you're going to lose some of your blooms for the spring, which is the case with a lot of plants. However, that doesn't mean... Oh, by the way, I got to give you a story, which is that I... did one of the worst pruning jobs ever on a spirea this year. I was in a hurry, and I just hacked at that baby, it looks awful. So I may just cut mine down now as we go into the winter and say, you know, spring.
Cut your losses, so
yeah, cut my losses. Spring blooming, who cares? And we'll have it come up later. But, you know, spirea is one of those plants that when it blooms in the spring, it will prune it right after it blooms, then it'll bloom again. Of course, you also have to know what variety of spirea you have. What do you have there? Do you know?
You know what? I don't. It's been there for maybe 15 years or more, and I'm not sure. I don't know if they bloom in different colors. It gets a pink, rosy color flower.
Mm-hmm. And does it have the light leaves, what do they call them, chartreuse leaves?
Not quite chartreuse.
Uh-huh.
The newer ones are, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, and are some of the stems getting woody? And woody, yeah,
And I do prune those out.
Yeah, because each year you should take out some of the older stems so that you have the vigorous newer ones.
Yeah.
If it depends when it blooms. If it blooms in the summer, you can prune it in the early spring. But if it's blooming in the spring, you're going to want to leave it alone right now and then prune it right after it blooms.
Okay. She's all right to cut out the deadhead, though.
Wouldn't you say? The deadwood?
Yeah, you're all right to cut out the deadwood.
You know what? I would cut out the deadwood, and I would even cut out some of the older things, you know, some of the older branches in there and get those out of the way, too. You know, when they say, I always find it interesting because the rule of thumb is you don't want to prune spring-blooming plants in the fall because you'll lose the blooms. However, if you know that you're going to lose those blooms and you know what the shape of the tree is going to be like, then it's, for instance, I use this example, my prairie fire crab apple I have in my backyard. Well, the blooms are all up and down the branches. So even if I trim a branch, I'm still going to get blooms on the short part of the branch. If I remove a whole branch, yeah, I'm not going to have those blooms, but I already know that. I think it's interesting how people are warned not to prune it, but if you know what you're doing and you know what to expect, you won't be surprised.
Okay. So
that's the best I can do for you right now. Mickey, is that okay?
That's great. Could I just ask one more question?
Go for it.
How about I have Queen of the Prairie, and I'm thinking of moving it. Should I wait until spring?
You could move it now, but you just want to make sure that it stays really well watered, because you don't want to do is if you move perennials now and then say we have a dry winter, then you're risking it a little bit. You know, honestly, to be safe, what I would do is move part of it and maybe just leave a little piece there that you could move in the spring in case they don't all come up. That way, you know, you're not potentially losing your whole plant. Well, but I love the Queen of the Prairie.
That's a great idea.
Favorites.
Now, you guys have Queen of the Prairie in the Lurie Garden.
We do. And, you know, interestingly, that's one of the plants this summer that got really leggy and fell over a lot, and so we did cut it all back like in the middle of July, and now we have like a really nice flush of all the new leaves, and it's making actually a beautiful ground cover sort of. It's about 6 to 12 inches high now.
Well, that makes sense because that's an herbaceous perennial, so it's not like again pruning a shrub where you're cutting off the bloom. You could cut it is whenever you want to create whatever shape you want.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Good to know.
And by the way, for those people listening, Queen of the Prairie is also Filipendula, right?
Yes, Filipendula.
Do you remember the specific species, Filipendula rubra? Rubrum? I don't remember.
I think it's probably, rubra, rubrum. But that's one of the beautiful plants in the Lurie Garden. It blooms kind of late summer, mid to late summer. Of course, everything bloomed early this year. With all of the warm temps we had.
Well, one of the things. Mickey, I'm going to let you go. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
All right. One of the things that we've been noting all summer on the show is how far we were ahead of last year in degree days, and it turned out to be almost a whole month ahead of last year. But on average, it was only a couple of days ahead of the average. But in terms of last year, a month. That's a huge difference, and that makes a huge difference in the garden then, too.
It does, because we have a lot of things blooming, you know, that we predict to bloom a month later, but we have blooming really early. You know, this year, the Salvia River, which is one of the highlights of the garden, was blooming a few weeks earlier than it had in the past. So, you know, when we're trying to time those things and promote them to let people know when to come and see certain plants blooming, it makes it a little trickier for us when we have changes.
when the plants don't cooperate.
Oh, because you're sending out releases and stuff? Yeah. Wait a second. Let's get some advice from Rebecca on line one. Rebecca, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Hi.
Hi, Mike. Love your show. I was just going to share what I did with Spirea at my house. These were bridal wreaths, though. So it sounds like she had the low.
Yeah,
low
see, and that's the thing. That's why I said you got to know what kind of spirea you have, because bridal wreaths, which are wonderful, they can get very tall, and they have these sprays of white flowers in the spring. It's fabulous. What do you do with your bridal wreath?
So these were really overgrown, and there was just so much old stuff in them. Last Easter, so before they leased out and everything, we just cut them back all the way to like 3 or 4 inches. And so they're slowly coming back. I mean, everything came back. It's just it's going to take a couple years to get the height and full growth.
Now, why did you do that?
They were just so thick and overgrown and too big for the space.
Yeah.
that. And there was a whole, you know, they were in front of the house, and there was a whole row of them.
And I bet you found a lot of really thick stems in there that were kind of not very productive.
Yeah, real big woody stuff, and yeah.
But that's a different kind of spirea from the one Mickey was talking about. Mickey was talking about the low-growing with the pink flowers. You're talking about the one that can get very tall and sprays of white flowers. And there are different ways to do it. But one of the things you're pointing out, which is really important, is that you can hack them back. And a lot of these shrubs, it'll take, you know, a little bit of time to come back. Not very long. I would think you'll get some blooms this coming year. But it'll be interesting to see how that progresses. Rebecca, where do you live?
I live in Evanston.
Okay. How would you like a gift certificate to Pesci's?
Oh, that'd be great.
All right. We're going to send you a $25 gift certificate to Pesci's. You hang on, talk to Leah, and she will get you the information, okay?
Thanks so much.
All right. Jennifer Davitt, thank you. We have a tweet from My Skinny Garden. I cut my Van Hoot to the ground in fall, and it was beautiful next spring. Thought they bloom on new wood. That may very well be the case. The Van Hoot. You got to look up the spirea. I'm going to do a little more research, because I thought that too. I was kind of under the impression that you could, like, hack those guys in the fall and get them to come back, and then if you pinched them again in the spring after they bloomed, you get another flush. So I'm going to take a little more look at that. Jennifer Davitt, thank you so much for coming in here.
Oh, well, thanks. It's great to be here. And, you know, I'd just like to let your viewers know that we have one of our
And
best...
I have many viewers.
I'm listeners.
And
listeners, sorry.
The only viewers I have right now are you guys in the room.
And it's a show.
Yeah.
But that we do have a great lecture coming up this Thursday. We have Rick Dart coming, who's nationally and actually internationally known. He's an expert on grasses and sustainable gardening practices.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of our lectures. It's this Thursday at 6 p.m. at the Cultural Center.
Well, and the point also, and I have the link to the Lurie Garden on my website, is that you do events all the time. You have lectures all the time. You even have tours through the winter?
We have some tours through the winter. Those are specially scheduled tours, mm-hmm. so you would need to look for the dates. And actually today, this Sunday, is our last guided walk. So that will be going on today until 1:30 at the garden. So we have volunteers and a staff person there who are giving
it
tours
today. It goes
on
until 1:30?
Till 1:30 today.
Meaning what?
The last tour leaves at
1:30. Oh, at last? Okay, see, I was thinking, well, is it going on now? And if you get there at the...
yeah, it's going on now.
But how often, where do they start?
They start at the south end of the boardwalk in the garden. You'll see, we have a tent there with volunteers.
So you could go down there on this beautiful day if you're not a Bears fan, and many of you aren't, and after last week's game... I don't have a whole lot of hope for being a Bears fan this year. You go to the Lurie Garden. Don't tie your stomach in knots. Do something that's beautiful and actually good for you and healthy. that will relax you, not make you tense.
Yeah, and actually, you know, this Tuesday we also have raptors in the garden. That's Tuesday evening. And so
you have raptors in the
raptors.
Oh, raptors.
Yeah, some people come from the northern from the Illinois Raptor Society.
Uh-huh.
And they come and bring some owls, and last time they also had a kestrel.
And when is this?
This Tuesday.
At what time?
I believe it's still 6 to 8. We might have moved it to 5 to 7, but I haven't had confirmation
It's dark
yet.
At 8.
Right. So we were trying to move it to 5 to 7.
I think
7.
It's a good idea.
Yeah. It's on our website, though, as well.
That's Jennifer Davitt, the chief horticulturist at the Lurie Garden. Sue Markgraf, thank you for being here,
Thanks,
too.
Thanks, Mike.
Hang around. I got to talk to you after the show.
I know you do.
Yeah. You don't want to talk to me. Okay.
I'll talk to you anytime, Mike.
Okay. Great. Okay. We know you own something that's pink. I mean, even you guys out there, I know a good friend of mine thinks I look great in a pink shirt. The question is, because pink's kind of it's a trendy, classy color. Question is, can you work it into your outfit? Because if you wear something pink into Lurvy Landscape Supply and Garden Center from October 1st to the 10th, you'll get 10% off any purchase. A pink flower would be perfect, for instance. In fact, in honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month this October, Lurvy's is donating $3 from every sale of every pink hydrangea variety called Invincible Spirit, and it's going to the Breast Cancer Foundation. This hot pink version of the hardy white hydrangea Annabelle will bloom up to, and even after the harshest of winters, this breeding breakthrough was recently awarded Best in Show at the 2010 Independent Garden Center Show here in Chicago this August. The kickoff party for Pink Week at Lurvy's is Friday, October 1st from 5 to 7 p.m. Lurvy's is located at 2550 East Dempster Street in Des Plaines, Illinois. For more information, visit lurveys.com, L-U-R-V-E-Y-S.com. Be a gardener for life by shopping at Lurvy Landscape Supply and Garden Center from October 1st to October 10th. Lurvy's is a proud sponsor of the Breast Cancer Research Foundation.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Here's a tip from the care of trees. If you have mature trees on your property and you're worried about fall storms, you should know that the Care of Trees has 24-hour emergency service. Storms can result in broken limbs or even downed trees, and many people don't know how dangerous it is to remove or prune those trees yourself. The last thing you want to do is see a guy up on a ladder, you know, balancing with one hand and a chainsaw in the other. To me, that's one of the scariest sights in the whole world. What's worse, trees can fall on cars, other structures, power lines, or even other trees. That complicates removal even more. The point is that the Care of Trees offers a 24-hour emergency service to assist in performing the job safely while minimizing further risk to your property. The Care of Trees has been serving Chicagoland for 60 years and shares your enthusiasm for the many ways trees enhance the quality of your life. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. And you can do that by going to thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees. You see how clever I am. I use this, catch me if you can, and maybe it's in regard to some of the businesses, big businesses, so-called energy companies that despoil our waters and our lands, because sometimes it's a hard thing to catch them. And
catch all the oil that we
that's right.
Spew onto them.
Arr, I be spilling oil. Arr. Let's bring in Josh Mogerman on line one from the Natural Resources Defense Council. Josh, I have to ask you, can you speak like a pirate?
Avast ye swabbies, there be problems on our shores.
Yes.
Yes! Yes! You've been practicing that during the whole show, haven't you?
Of course. Don't you always look for opportunities to talk like a pirate?
Absolutely. And since it is Talk Like a Pirate Day.
Right.
So, arr. Arr. Oh, this is so satisfying, Josh. You don't know. Oh, boy. Well, here we are. You know, as I mentioned earlier in the show, right at the top, those of us living here in the Midwest looked down at the Gulf Coast in more ways than one, you know, because we thought, oh, those poor people, they live near all those rigs and they got to deal with all that stuff. Oh, that oil comes washing up. And that is not going to happen here in the Midwest because we're on high ground. And then, of course, the pipeline exploded in Michigan and leaked all kind. Well, it was the worst. Was that the worst? It was the worst spill in Michigan's history. Any idea how it fits into ground spills elsewhere?
It's in the top 10 nationally. There's still evaluating where it fits and the numbers. But there's some pretty horrific spills elsewhere in the country in our history. So it's definitely not going to be in the top five.
But that was sort of disconcerting. And we thought, oh, well, that's Michigan, and who knows why that happened. then another one blows here in the suburbs of Chicago in Romeoville, 250,000 gallons at last count. And both of them were Enbridge Energy pipelines. And so we start, you know, me, I'm an idiot. I'm thinking before this of... I know that pipelines come through the area, but I always had this idea that there's a big pipeline, like one big pipe. Just don't hit that one pipe, and everything will be fine. But as it turns out, there are just mazes of them, networks of pipes that go under the Midwest states, right?
Yeah, and particularly our region. You know, we've talked before about the presence of huge amounts of tar sands refining in Chicagoland, this really thick, dirty oil that comes from Canada. The Line 6A that burst in Romeoville is actually one of those big lines you should avoid. It's actually one-third of the oil that comes from Canada goes through that pipeline. It's somewhere closing in on 10% of the oil we use daily going through that pipeline. So that one is a biggie. But, you know, we have huge amounts of refining capacity in this area, and those all require pipelines to feed them. And unfortunately, rather than maintaining the older pipelines that are there, the pipeline companies like Enbridge have been attempting to add more and more. And that's where you start getting problems like we've seen in both Michigan and in Romeoville. And don't forget, in between those two, in northwest Indiana, the BP Whiting refinery had a pipeline leak that spilled gasoline and gasoline products under a couple of busy streets in that area that still hasn't been completely contained.
And correct me if I'm wrong about this, but wasn't the BP and Whiting all about trying to increase their tar sands oil production a couple of years ago when the controversy arose about that?
Absolutely. They're about halfway through a massive replumbing of the refinery to make it one of the biggest tar sands refiners in the world. They're adding somewhere in the neighborhood of a quarter billion gallons a day capacity. And, that stuff is, I wanted to say speeding its way, but it's so sludgy it moves very slowly in the pipelines. But,
well, that's a really good point, though. You know, when you say sludgy, why is tar sands oil, how is tar sands oil different from the oil, say, that we get from Saudi Arabia?
Sure. You know, the biggest thing is that it's not really oil. It's this substance called bitumen. And, you know, here in Chicago, we have plenty of bitumen roofs. It's the reason it's called tar sands is because it's this very, very thick, low-grade petroleum that in Canada is either mined, strip mined, or steamed out of the ground. And it's very dirty. It has huge amounts of sulfur, huge amounts of heavy metals and VOCs, and you know, most concerningly, as we're starting to use it more and more, it has up to three times the carbon liabilities of more typical petroleums that we're used to, the light sweet crude that we hear about. Those days are over. We're getting more and more reliant on stuff like the tar sands or heavy oil from Venezuela, and that does not bode well in our battle against climate change.
And we get a lot of our oil from Canada, which I think surprises people. How much of the oil supply comes from Canada?
Well, they're our number one supplier now. Everyone seems to think it's the Saudis. The Saudis give us somewhere in the neighborhood of 17% of the oil that we use on a daily basis. The Canadians are right now at 19%, and most industry observers say that the vast majority of that oil that comes to the United States will likely be from the tar sands. It'll be our single largest source of oil in the next 5 years. Some people are saying that that's already happened, but it's very difficult to track those numbers right now.
So as you say, it's very dirty oil. It requires a lot of processes that wreak environmental havoc, not just at the end, but where it's harvested, steaming, you know, pushing steam into the ground and working the boreal forest, which is destroying the water supplies there. I'm amazed that the Canadian government isn't a little more up in arms and the Canadian people aren't a little more up in arms about this.
You know, there's a growing anger and frustration there. But, you know, Stephen Harper, the Prime Minister of Canada, is an oil guy.
There's a big surprise. Somebody in power who happens to work for them. That never happens in this country.
Yeah, who'd have guessed it? But, you know, if you look at... there are some very loud voices right now in Canada. This has been a very bad couple of weeks for the tar sands producers, with some really, really scathing scientific reports coming out about the water poisoning in the areas of the tar sands mines, with issues about bird deaths, migratory bird deaths. And, you know, if you listen to some of the folks like... muckraking journalist Andrew Nikiforuk, they would argue that Canada is turning into a petrostate, not dissimilar to the issues that you see in Saudi Arabia, with lack of freedoms and restrictions on monetary policy. So it's a little scary to see what's happening up north.
And down here, we got all these pipes running underneath, all this infrastructure that's about 50 years old, and as we can see, some of it is starting to fray at the edges. Is this due to the kind of oil that's being, you know, the one, I just read something yesterday about the one in Romeyville. They said, oh, you know what happened? A rock pushed into it, so that made the pipe give. And I thought, boy, that sounds like a cover-up to me. But, you know, does this really put strain on these pipes?
You know, we're going to be seeing a lot about this stuff in the coming months. While there may or may not be a good reason for the Romeoville burst in Michigan, we know that the pipeline company was told months in advance, hey, there's a problem with this line. Since then, we found out that there are more than 300 defects and irregularities in that line, and the company chose not to do anything about it, and in fact asked for more time to think about what to do with it. Those lines are part of the same system that we have here in Romeoville. It is really old. It was put in the late 60s, early 70s. And, yeah, it was made to carry a different kind of petroleum than what it's carrying now. And we're told that retrofits have been put in place and those issues are taken care of. But since it's very difficult to find out what is flowing through those pipelines at any given time, it's also very difficult to evaluate what impacts the materials going through it are. You know, we get a variety of different kinds of oil from Canada down here. Some of it very typical, you know, medium and light crude. Some of it diluted bitumen, which is the stuff from the tar sands, which is far more corrosive and has to be pushed under much heavier pressure because it's so thick. So that's something that I think you'll be hearing more and more about as the National Transportation Safety Board does some evaluations of these things.
And it looks like the Obama administration is going to try to clamp down a little bit on these pipelines, which would be a good thing, but getting anything through Congress right now is difficult. And I have this image, you know, you're talking about trying to push this stuff through somebody at one end of the pipeline with this huge plumber's helper just, you know, plunging it and say, get going, get through there. And the other thing I want to bring up before I let you go is the gas prices.
Yeah.
So we get this spill in Romeoville and immediately, we're talking within 24 hours, right? The gas prices start to spike.
Yeah, which is largely unfounded. You know, the gasoline that is at your local service station has been there for a while. It's coming through a pipeline from the refinery. So the spill itself has no impact on what you should be paying for gasoline the next day. It's nothing more than price gouging. You know, certainly we have to remember that there's a very big difference between gasoline prices and oil futures. You know, the price that we see for a barrel of oil changes, and that certainly is something that would be affected by this pipeline leak. But the sort of price gouging that we saw is sort of like if a giant tornado went through the state of Iowa and destroyed the entire popcorn or the entire corn crop, and the next day you went to the movie theater and they charged you an extra dollar for your popcorn. That's sort of analogous to what's going on here. It's ludicrous and has no bearing. It's simply profit-taking.
So, folks, you're being gouged. Your environment is being despoiled, and all for the sake of really toxic oil. And that's another reason we need to get a real energy policy passed through Congress, and you got to keep hammering it home to your representatives. Josh Mogerman from the NRDC, thanks again. You're always welcome on the program, and we'll keep in touch about this, okay?
It's a pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Take care. Have a great Sunday. Oh, and give me an R.
R!
Thank you,
matey. See you later.
All right, bye. Ba 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 X. Is that how that goes?
Yeah. I think that's good.
Yeah. Ba 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 X.
Bob X.
Bob X. Okay. Bob X will not only keep your plants rocking and rolling through an early fall frost and the frigid winter by helping them retain moisture, but Bob X, our animal repellent, will help keep those vegetation scavengers away. Yes, we're talking to you, Mrs. Squirrel, Miss Rabbit, and Mr. Deer. To protect your stock from deer, rabbits, and squirrels throughout the winter, just dip your bulbs, and that's not code, dip your bulbs in concentrated Bob-X R right out of the bottle. Allow bulbs to soak for 3 to 5 minutes, remove the bulbs from the concentrate, and allow them to air dry. Products from Bob-X, which has been making environmental products since 1989, are harmless to humans, pets, birds, and aquatic life. They contain no petrochemicals, and they're made from natural and recycled ingredients. Of course, always read and follow label directions. Bob-X is available only at your local independent garden center. For example, Seasons Garden Center in Alton, Illinois, Pasquazi Home and Gardens in Barrington, and Sandy's Back Porch Garden Center in Bellevue, Illinois. Remember, plants thrive and survive with Bob-X. All right, I can do another song. You say you want a revolution. Everything's a song, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, there's a lawn revolution going on in America, and one of the leaders is EcoLawn. It's the lawn that uses almost no water or fertilizer once established. Like I said, EcoLawn is a revolutionary blend of fine fescue grasses that will tolerate shade and will grow in clay soils, sandy soils, and nutrient-depleted soils. EcoLawn is great for the city, great for the suburbs, great for any yard. You can find it at Lake Street Landscape Supply in Chicago or go to EcoLawn.com, EcoLawn.com. And these days, more and more businesses are going green. That's good news. But the growing popularity of green service providers also points to the value of those who have led the way. WRD Environmental is one of them. Since they were formed in 1997, WRD's mission has been to create sustainable landscapes. They've always used locally grown native plants when possible in their design and build projects, used recycled energy-efficient supplies, and sought nature's balance. Being green has simply been part of their DNA since their founding 12 years ago. Even the location speaks to their commitment. They're in the Chicago Center for Green Technology, one of the nation's greenest buildings. And their civic contributions towards sustainability run deep. Staff members on the board of a variety of green organizations, and through the years, they have donated their expertise to several green nonprofits, like Mila was on earlier today. For experienced sustainable landscape development, trust the professionals at WRD Environmental on the web at WRDEnvironmental.com. We're out of time. Spirea, you know what? I just looked online, and one more thing for Mickey out in Downers Grove. One person says, you know, late winter, just cut it back. You can take it down to the ground if you want. And that's what our tweeter said as well. All right. Leah Petrujak, thank you very much.
Yes.
We will see you next week on the Mike Novak Show.